Our next speaker is Louise Trueheart, International Affairs major from Paris, France.
Airport world. A river of loudspeaker announcements, snacks, magazines, and people. It takes care of everything. You bask down broad, air-conditioned corridors, your mind afloat. You're alert and awake only to the extent that you successfully arrive on time at the next gate without losing your belongings. The rest of your brain is free to be hungover and groggy, restless and in transition mode, or absorbed in observing others. At JFK in December of 2011, my brain was all three. Today I want to talk about observing others. But first, a story from T.H. White's Sword in the Stone deserves attention. Merlin is completing young Arthur's education. He transforms Arthur into a badger so that he can hear a fable from an older, sage-like badger. The fable is as follows. God is in the process of creating the world. He is standing before a crowd of identical fetuses, and each fetus approaches him to ask for up to three gifts. One asks to become a water bottle, so God turns him into a toad that lives in the marshes. The badger fetus had asked to have shovels for hands, a shield for a back, and razors as teeth. All the fetuses make their requests and turn into their appropriate animals. The last fetus to come before God asks to remain the same. Its reasoning is that if God created them that way, then they must be perfect. God is flattered and turns the fetus into man. Let's focus on the part when all the fetuses are identical. The story is an illustration of Haeckel's law. Have any of you heard of it? Probably not. It was debunked long ago. Haeckel's law claims that phylogeny recapitulates ontology. Let me explain. It goes like this. In the womb, a fetus will go through all evolutionary stages of that fetus's species. So at various points during incubation, the fetus resembles each species that came before the species it will be born as. The theory would say that our little human fetuses spend some time looking like apes in the womb. Elephant fetuses spend some time looking like mammoths in the womb. The basic reasoning for the theory is, as the badger's fable illustrates, the idea that every living creature started out looking the same and then diverged throughout the history of the evolution of life. I was thinking about this while I was observing the glorious varieties of people on parade at the airport. As I looked at the people slumped in the bench opposite, I did to their faces what some do to words when they repeat them too many times, and the word begins to sound strange and meaningless. You relax your eyes and concentrate on only orifices in the faces. You can do this on the bus, too. Think of the orifices as the lowest common denominator across the faces. All of a sudden, they start to stand out, and the skin and shape in between recedes into the background. What you get are creatures you've never seen before, absorbing and exuding impressions, smells, sounds, and information. Our orifices are the way we interact with the world and the way the world interacts with us. Without orifices, life would never be able to show off how colorful, jiggly, smooth, rank, loud, funny, sweaty, savory, warm, and endearing it is. Our orifices and the way they make our faces look communicate our feelings to those around us, friends and strangers alike. They are the pages of the book of our life and the screen to the computer of the body. In other words, they're up for interpretation. Traveling makes you look at faces differently. Most of us know that traveling changes the way you look at the world, but honestly, what doesn't change the way you see the world? Lewis and Clark is a place where opinions are formed. Perhaps you feel like you arrived at LC a blank slate and that you were colored in by conversations and readings or class discussion. Maybe you arrived with a strong set of opinions and leave today with, hopefully, something a little more nuanced. Or perhaps your opinions did a 180 over the course of 4 years. Regardless of what happens day to day, what you do, who you talk to, what you read, what you talk about, it all has an impact on you and your opinion. I would venture to say that, even if only in a small way, you felt like your opinions defined you when you first arrived at Lewis and Clark. This is nothing to be ashamed of. Past experiences are the basis of who we are. Today, I stand before you, a girl who believes in a grassroots approach to development, likes to wear dresses, is dubious of neoliberal economic policies, thinks the English classics are fun, thinks contemporary dance is the way her soul expresses herself, who loves God, and who likes to do the crossword. 4 years ago, I probably would have said something quite different, like, I stand before you as a girl who likes the soundtracks of musicals, the Beatles, thinks human rights are really important and Republicans suck, is interested in experimenting with college, loves reading books and writing poetry and doing the crossword. Some things change, some things develop, and some fade away. As freshmen, having steadfast and genuine opinions is cool because it says that you are someone. The music you like, the issues you care about, your habits all determine who you're going to be friends with. NSO is a parade of opinions. You wear the music you like. You argue about politics you think you understand. You silently but nobly rub the cuts you got running around barefoot with calendula oil. As the years go on, your opinion becomes more informed and may change. This process of change is difficult to face up to. Somewhere on the inside of me, I said to myself, but I thought I really liked musicals. I have it written on my Facebook profile. And what is all this about Dr. Dog, an Old Crow medicine show? And furthermore, what does it say about me if who I was a year ago is not who I am today? Am I a poser? Am I a less legitimate person now because I care? Am I a less legitimate person because now I care more about recycling and quinoa than the lyrics to Rent? In high school, I used to say, how do I know what I think until I see what I've said? This is a good mantra because it reminds us to be flexible. Society tells us to reject a loose or vague approach to our identities because if an identity is shifty, it doesn't define you and you are left as a non-person, a loser, a conforming droid slave to the man. But the mantra, how do I know what I think until I see what I've said, draws attention to the fact that people change, opinions change, and a lot of change depends on the context. As young people, we feel a drive to appear, even if only to ourselves, as legitimate adults with value systems and a rich and exciting history that produced who we are in the present. We try to justify change by tracking and measuring how our life's path has changed us. We forget that the direction of our path is determined by chance. In the musical Rent, Colin asks how to measure the days in the life of a woman or a man. In daylights, in sunsets, in midnights, in cups of coffee, in inches, in miles, in laughter, in strife. In the same vein, Professor Cortell taught us IA majors the importance of operationalization. Operationalization is when you take an abstract concept, such as, say, cooperation, and make it concrete by explaining what it looks like and how you can measure it. In social science, we make abstract concepts concrete in order to be able to track the development of knowledge. Any conclusion would be unreliable without an explicit justification and description of how we got from observation A to observation B. Professor Cortell, like the cast of Rent that I loved so dearly in high school, both ask us to think about the advancement of time and knowledge and the way change washes over us. So, how can the past 4 years be measured? How many papers have you written? How many grants? How many trips to Buffalo Exchange? How many romances? How many Halloweens? 8 finals weeks? 4 dance extravaganzas? How many heated arguments about organized religion? How many Monday crossword puzzles? How many double Americanos from the Dovecote? How many bone breakfasts? Sleepless nights in the library? B pluses? Tanks of gas? Times up the graveyard on a bike? Moments of anticipation before realizing that, yet again, you caught nobody's eye this week. Tracking the past causes one to predict the future. Before us is a time that will call for flexibility and adaptability. You've all heard about the apocalypse, scheduled to happen this coming December. But have you heard the upside? Basically, whoever was in charge of reading the Mayan runes from which the end of the world was derived didn't get their whole story publicized. People exaggerated the death and gloom part and didn't talk about the good part. The good part is that the runes can be interpreted in a more positive way. According to this theory, there will be a revolution of consciousness. Gone will be the days of lust for greed and hunger for power. Instead, our actions will be based off of consideration for others. The game will be called empathy. The years to come are obviously why I dwelled on the topic of change earlier. I believe that the world has had enough and that something has got to give and will be giving out soon. Don't buy real estate for the next year or so, seriously. Expect a lot of change, not just because we're entering a new era, but because the era is entering a new era. There are statistics up the wazoo about the scary part of the change, such as global warming and overpopulation, spread of disease and nuclear power plants on top of earthquakes, not to mention economic insecurity plaguing the short-term future and a socio-politico-economic institutional structure that caused the world to occupy. On the flip side, one cannot ignore the wealth of statistics about innovations in green technology, open architecture, artists planting seeds of creativity in every nook and cranny of industries until recently cut off from the art world. Different types of industries, schools of thoughts, genres, and practices are collaborating and learning from each other. Dance is beginning to be used instead of PowerPoint. NGOs and philanthropic organizations have been growing exponentially in number since the 50s and have not slowed due to the financial crisis of the past decade. The Occupy movement is a testament to the idea that something has got to give, but also shows that the world wants to experience it together. To cope with all this, we need to be flexible and ready for change. Welcome it with a smile, curiosity, and focus. It's not going to be easy for us or for the world, so we should go easy on ourselves as we work it out. I repeat, go easy on yourself. Change can make you uncomfortable. Noticing that you have changed can be painful. Some of this pain can be attributed to our individuality-revering society. We are told to do what's right for you, follow your heart, find what you are best at, and do it. But that ignores the fact that who a person is changes. Context and company changes you. The proof? Look at how different you are now compared to how you were when you were a freshman. I want you to realize that you will continue to change for the next 4 years and the next ones after that. When we were freshmen, we made friends with each other on community service day, playing beer pong in Copeland, smoking cigarettes in front of the co-op, at tryouts for the frisbee team, on the football field, or in the dark of night as a ninja. We were confident enough in who we were to say, yes, hi, I'm Louise. I like X, Y, and Z, and I like that you do too. But back then, we were not anticipating the change to come. In 4 years, X, Y, and Z changed, and so did we. So here we are today, basting in parental love, congratulatory handshakes, and a diploma. Don't get too comfortable. Don't let you and the world around you even more are going to continue changing. Don't let your individuality, the person you consider yourself to be right now, stand in the way of you doing something new and different. I'm not telling you to sell out and change everything about yourself next time you change locations, jobs, or general life contexts. There's no way you could ever truly change who you are because you are a product of what you have lived and learned. Rather, let yourself develop. Absorb and mull over all the little ways that life shows itself off for you, and gobble them up to spit them out as good deeds and constructive solutions to the problems to come. Get on the empathy train. Be empathetic by listening closely to all the new people we're about to meet, by reading as much as possible, and by traveling and tasting the world we live in. This brings me back to airport world. I always write when I'm in the airport. I wrote this speech in the airport. It's a place of people in transition, not unlike the position we're in right now. It's a delicate time. Enjoy it. It brings out the best in us because it makes us vulnerable. Welcome vulnerability. It will change you, no doubt about it. Be the first to experience change and be the friend who passes it on. Lastly, I want to share a poem by Mother Teresa. Some of you will probably have heard it, but I translated this version myself, so listen up. Life is an opportunity. Seize it. Life is beautiful. Gaze upon it in wonder. Life is bliss. Savor it. Life is a dream. Make it reality. Life is a challenge. Face it. Life is a duty. Accomplish it. Life is a game. Play it. Life is precious. Take care of it. Life is wealth. Save it. Life is love. Become ecstatic. Life is a mystery. Unveil it. Life is a promise. Make good on it. Life is sadness. Overcome it. Life is a song. Sing it. Life is a struggle. accept it. Life is a tragedy, embrace it. Life is an adventure, dare it. Life is happiness, deserve it. Life is life, protect it.